Blog Talk Radio.
My name, calling all night. I can pull the wool while I'm being polite. Like, darling, calling all night. I can be a fool while I'm being polite. Like, oh me, oh my. I know many women wanna be in my life. Like, oh me, oh my. Why can't every woman end up being my wife? Even if she go away, even if she go away, even if she go away, even if she go away. I'm a classic man. You can be mean when you look this clean. I'm a classic man.
Creep on in, on in, on in.
Steady with my freaky hoes, and I'm on a lady holding the fan down. And my
bros told me, the peoples who were there, want some suckers, let me lonely, phony. When you see a nigga, don't approach me. Made it to the top, baby, it's on me. Catch you trying to claim that they made me. However you feel, I know the real fugazi. I keep it 100, never frontin', no need be. I'm in another zone, no place you could see. My nigga, Cuno, two haters that don't know. Yoko, how a nigga life from Posto. The one fan's love who was always approachable, yo. And I'm the double O, so we eat Cheerio.
Everything I'm having, but it ain't necessity. So I'm shining, keep on grinding. What you see ain't all of me. So I keep them hoes on lock the mode. The code in which I roll, it's so simple what I need. You know I keep my fam and I care to keep that train. Can't forget that dream. Na 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 na. I can't forget that dream. Na 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 na. I can't forget that dream. Na 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 na.
But I'm the type that likes to light another joint like Cypress Hill. I still do be spit loogies when I puff on it. I got some bucks on it, but it ain't enough on it. Go get the S-T-I-D-E-S. Nevertheless, I'm hella fresh, rolling joints like a cigarette. So pass it across the table like ping pong. I'm gone, beating my chest like King Kong. It's on, wrap my lips around the phony. And when it comes to getting another soggy, fools all kick in like Shinobi. Know me ain't my homie to begin with. It's too many heads to be. Probably let my friend hit bit. Unless you pull out the fat crispy $5 bill on the reel before it's history. The fools be having a vacuum lungs. And if you let them hit it for free, you hella dumb. Da-dum-dum. I come to school with a tailor on my earlobe. Avoiding all the slick teasers, skeezers, and weirdos. Got me throwing off the land like where the bomb at. Give me $2, you take a puff and pass my bomb back. Suck up the dank like a Slurpee. The serious bomb will make a nigga go delirious like Eddie Murphy. I got more growing pains than Maggie. Cause homies nag me to take the dank out of the bag.
Step into my path is fucking real. Well, yeah, without any further ado, we have with us the Honorable Judge Joe Brown. Judge Joe, you with me?
I'm with you. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. I'm well, and how are you?
I'll manage.
You'll manage? Now, we expect better than that. Our
That's
Honorable Joe
Brown. All you can get.
Okay, well, we'll take it.
Well, you know, I'm still breathing. So still breathing, still walking, so I guess that's okay.
That's excellent. There's a lot of people that aren't.
That's right. So what can I do for you this evening?
Well, now, I want to talk about you running for mayor. I want you to tell me about that.
Oh, yes, in Memphis, Tennessee.
You plan on shaking up Memphis?
Well, yes. We've got too many crooks that have been ruining this place over the last few decades. We've got some selfish individuals who don't understand that when you hold public office, that's in trust for the people, and the people are first and paramount. They look at holding an office as an opportunity to get rich quick, them and their sponsors, and that's gone on long enough. So we have a term limited situation. We've got an incompetent in as mayor. His name is James Strickland. He's come up with nothing, ineffective policies. He's known as the Poppin' Fresh Doughboy. He can be molded by the people that break him out of his package before they pop him in the oven, and that's about all he's done except implement really stupid policies such as, oh, my God, we've got violence. Maybe if we preoccupy the kids and get them some renovated laptops so they can play video games, they won't be so disruptive. That is absolutely ridiculous. So now, for the first time in some decades, there's no incumbent in the office, and everybody seems to be coming out of the woodwork. I am pretty well received by the people, but the local media does not like me for several reasons. One, they've been trying to do this medium thing, and I came out of nowhere, not even interested, and made it big time, and they're still local yokels. And they've got some house Negro types in who've made a living of pontificating on who the good Negroes are, who should be supported, and they do absolutely nothing to turn things around. And it's not just all about black. It's about white, black, brown, red, yellow, and everybody needs to get in on this. And we have a middle class that's been sorely neglected for the last several decades. And we've got small businessmen who need to be getting advanced by the city rather than being used so their blood can be sucked for the good of a select few. This is the center of the continental distribution network, and it ought to be made into something big, and it could be, but the people that have been running things have no vision. They just have greed. When somebody says the most important thing is to improve the downtown skyline, but the utility company is suffering from ragged, worn-out infrastructure. There are potholes all over the place, trash all over the place. It's not safe, and no one who seems to be in charge has a clue except to appoint a committee or come up with a program, throw money at it, and have bureaucrats who haven't a clue try to run things like they have no clue. We have the opportunity to get an international trade here going both ways and enhance what we have. There's a Mississippi River that obviates the need for making dams or nuclear energy. We can get hydroelectric power out of it, but nobody has thought of it. We need to bring in some solar arrays and farms so that they can be put into the net. We need to sell our surplus from New Orleans to Louisville, Chicago, all points in between, bring in heavy industry. We need reformation of the police department so we don't have to worry about ineffective civilian oversight. We have civilian direction and policy made such that the police would become modeled on the U.S. Department of Defense, where you have a civilian secretary of defense, civilian secretaries of Army, Navy, etc. We'd have sub-directors or commissioners of police, uniform patrol, sex crimes, property, juvenile matters, you name it, traffic. And we could get a handle on that. There's a need to set up community arbitration tribunals so that we would not allow attorneys to practice, but people could deal with their disputes through binding contractual arbitration like I did on my show for 15 years. Yes. And that would reduce a lot of the interpersonal hostility and aggression. But right now, they can't afford to go down to our small claims court, let alone higher courts, because it costs too much. And we've got too many lawyers around who aren't anxious to give back and do pro bono work. It's all about money, and that just makes things get backed into a corner. And supposedly, some folk can move here and there and forget about it. We need to do something about taking control of the neighborhoods again. We need fatherhood back in the hood, and one way to do that is to implement what it says in the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the common defense. We don't want any Klan-related bozos, but we do need to have, community-based militias. And the city can set that up so we get retired first responders, veterans, and good citizens who don't mind going out on patrol to supplement or supplant the police department. So we do have the opportunity available for good citizens to be part of the solution instead of just suffering unendingly without any relief in sight. Now, that is something we need to look into. We have, unfortunately, the young Democrats are dominated by rabid feminists these days, and they want to do what they were trying to do that failed so badly with Tracy Abrams down in Georgia. They want to do here, but it's not going to work, and they're beating their heads on a wall. So there are things to be done. The election is nonpartisan. You can't have party involvement in it officially. So I'm running as an independent, which I am anyway. Mm-hmm. And we can do a lot of things. We can make this the Mecca of the South again, a place where people want to relocate to rather than a place where people want to hurry up and leave. And that's the potential, and it could become the Chicago of the 21st century. So that's what I'm going to set about doing. Now, we had a straw poll that some people tried to exclude me from. Frankly, it was supposed to be an embarrassment to me, but what happened is they cut it off before I could get 51% of the vote out of 10 candidates, but all you need is a plurality, and I got 47%, and the next guy got 36%. And one of the people that some folk, the young Democrats, were working for didn't even get 1% of the vote. So the interesting thing is I have won countywide elections here. In fact, the last one I won set a record. It was the only election in Shelby County where Memphis is located since 1863, where a candidate in a contested election won every precinct in the county, which I did. The next somebody that's in here, there are two that have run for elected office, and they've never gotten more than 4,000 votes, let alone a few hundred thousand. And there's one guy who ran unopposed for sheriff, but I can't say he's been a bad sheriff, though I would note that he's had three deaths in the same facility that he works in, unconvicted defendants dying in jail over less than a month and a half period, and that does not bode well. So it's time for somebody that knows what he's doing, knows how to do it, and has some ideas to take charge to turn the place around, and that's what I intend to do.
And I'm sure that you would do that. Now, I have a question for you. In your October meeting, it was introduction into Memphis, I believe, and you made a statement when asked about a woman running for mayor. And you said
I got asked a sexist, racist, and misogynist question by one of these feminist idiots. Since there's never been a black female mayor of Memphis, why wouldn't I withdraw and so one could win? Well, I had already belabored the point that whoever the next mayor is has to be able to get up close and personal, face to face with people who he will be representing. And I made a challenge to all of the rest of the candidates, which is if you are fit for this office, you wouldn't mind walking by yourself after dark without an armed guard, because if you are fit, then the people recognize you as a leader and will protect you. Otherwise, you don't need to hold the office. Now, that said, sometime before, one of these feminists had been present at a meeting and proposed this kind of thing, and a 19-year-old young lady college student told her to sit down because what needed to be done was for the men to take charge of these neighborhoods, impose manhood and peace in these neighborhoods, and if a woman tried to do that, somebody would snatch her into a vacant apartment and do what might happen. Now, they tried to make it a big deal, but actually it was a trap because they were trying to ignore my candidacy. And they wound up paying a lot of attention. Now, it was at a nightclub we called The Pocket here in downtown Memphis. It doesn't even have a sign out front. It looks like a tailor shop. You enter on the first floor, go down to the bar area on the second, and then on the third floor down, you have, well, a club area where you can dance and have entertainment, and that's where they had this meeting. They had about 120, 130 people down there, and I checked the sign-in sheet, and there were 23 of these young Democrat feminists who signed in, and the other 100 or so people were just ordinary people. Now, when I made that remark, men and women were doing high-five in the power fist and cheered. And others came, and particularly the women, and said, thank God somebody wants to protect us. How can I volunteer to work on your campaign? So there were 100 real satisfied and impressed people and maybe 20 or so who seemed upset by the concept. Now, I don't know about you, but one of the problems we have as a people is black men are not protecting black women like they ought to. I've had a motto for decades that says it is a man's obligation to protect womanhood and promote manhood in the next generation and in his own. And I stand by that.
That's true. Yes, I agree.
So,
now, let me ask you, what would it take for a woman to hold political office? Are you just against
political
office? I
don't know. Will the citizens support her? Right now, I don't think it's appropriate for Memphis because it's entirely too violent and it's too prone to all sorts of political skullduggery to the extent that it's not safe. It is literally the first-degree capital of America, and by that I'm not just limiting myself to street crime. You might have seen John Grisham's work, The Firm, and to an extent that is what Memphis is all about. And there are lots of first-degree murders where people turn up dead, where it seems to be an accident or something like that occurs. So that's not a safe place. So that's somebody like me who has a mass following amongst the people go out and make it a safe place, then we can worry about it. As far as it goes, well, let's just say that the people need a certain kind of charismatic, enthusiastic leadership. that does not concern itself with someone's political correctness. I can't go anywhere in this city without people coming up to take pictures, get autographs, or talk to me about how I put their grandmama or granddad on the right pathway or put them on the pathway, and now their grandparents are parents, and they want to know, am I going to do something further to do the same? I got recruited by a good lady, Dr. Barbara Cooper, whom I met years and years ago. She was our senior representative from this area. She was 93 when she passed after taking a bad fall a few months ago. But 2 years ago, she recruited me to run for the office. She set up my exploratory committee and chaired the Zoom meetings until she had her problems about 3 months ago. So there is no question about that. I have women who are my lawyers, doctors, dentists, advisors, chairing various committees on my campaign committee, subcommittees, and I have no problem with that. There are some that I have in mind for some important things that will occur, but right now the only person that's fit to be leader of this town that can get it anywhere is Joe Brown. That's why I have 2023 send Brown downtown and take back your town, JJB2023.com. You can go to the website.
Yeah.
So now is the time for me. I've been here a half century. I've done a lot for the people of this town. I don't need to get rich. I don't need to make money off of this. This is an obligation I have to finish some work I started long ago for the benefit of the people. And I want the people to run this town, and they can run it through me, whereas now they are just in place to vote people into office who have no concern for doing what is necessary for them. None at all. We have a situation where somebody wants to commit $250 million to improving the downtown sideline, a downtown skyline, by financing major international hotels chains, renovation of a downtown hotel. In the middle of downtown Memphis, these clowns sold 25 acres for just $600K to a developer, and they're renting the property back from the developer now. Somebody wants to put another $250 million into that so there can be 23 luxury upscale units that the taxpayers will spend $250 million on. There is this current clown in there that some of these idiots running want to support for taking a decrepit football arena and converting it to a soccer stadium to the core tune of $750 million and taking a fairgrounds and turning it into what? A nice gated community for a limited number of people to enjoy with a soccer stadium and a, I guess you would call it an arena, an enclosed arena that seats about 10,000 people so they can have their private entertainments. That's disgraceful.
Oh, yes, that is
disgraceful.
That's
the kind of thing that we've had, and that's where my opponents deal with. We've got one somebody who was on the county commission who passed a private resolution to sell two parks. He's bragging about we got rid of the Johnny Reb statues of Nathan Bedford Forrest and Jeff Davis. Yes, we did. But his corporation got to buy almost 20 acres of prime land, park land, in the midst of a hospital complex and next to a museum on the bluff for just $2,500 a parcel with no bid. The city is leasing those things back and taking care of the maintenance, the upkeep, the liability insurance, and the security. What do we get out of that? Well, I'm glad that they got rid of Jeff and Nathan, but, I mean, is it worth us giving them $20 million worth of property?
No, I would hope not.
Of course, well, that's what we have as alternatives. One other person who is a female, she is listed as a candidate. She is owned by everything from Exxon, who contributes to her, to British Petroleum, to Blue Cross, to every somebody that's ripping off ordinary people, and it looks like a who's who compendium. And that's who they want in. She didn't get 1% of the vote. They've got another somebody who's just giving away everything on the Board of Education, so the whole thing becomes privatized for profit in the educational prospects of the local students have been dropped down to zero. So, I mean, that's supposed to be something that you support? Come on now.
No,
crime is rampant.
Now, what are your plans for the educational system?
Well, first off, the city needs to take back control. A few years ago, under the guise of saving money, the city surrendered its educational charter and turned it over to the county. So now the county has an adjunct of Teach America that's run by a 35-year-old who has no educational background. It's for profit. The teachers don't need a four-year education now. All they need is 2 years in a junior college. This concern trains the teachers, selects the teachers, assigns the teachers, and pays them and starts them at $28,000 to $32,000 a year with no retirement benefits. And they've managed to fire off most of the senior teachers with long experience in teaching who have master's degree, PhDs, but they were making $80,000, $90,000 a year, so they got rid of them so they could replace them with people fresh out of junior college with no teaching experience for $2,800 to $3,200 a year. Now, we need to take that back. Meanwhile, what's going on is the County Board of Education has a legal department that's paid for, a legal counsel for the Board of Education, yet they hire a private silk stocking law firm that they pay $350 to $1,500 an hour for routine in-office work.
Well, you're going to have a lot on your plate.
Oh, I can handle it. I already have plans. I've been making plans for years just on the off chance.
Yes.
Now the one good mayor we had, Dr. W.W. Harrington, formerly supervisor of the board, superintendent of schools, they fired him on a trick, trumped up something, but he became the first elected black mayor 8 months later. Myself and another judge got called over way back in 1991 as official state witnesses, and we discovered that they were trying to steal the election and had hidden the electronic report of the vote count and were trying to say that Doc lost by 92 votes. We found where they had hidden the electronic recordation when a janitor pointed it out. The late Judge James Swearingen and I agreed that we'd put a $250,000 bond on everybody responsible, and all of a sudden people's memories came back, and they remembered where they had put the records, and it turned out Doc won by 124 votes. That was back in 1990. He got elected to five terms. Now, we've got somebody in place. Yeah, I'm one of my former law partners became the mayor. Then we have somebody in right now who got in because they had six black folk running against each other and him. He's white, but, you know, they have the electoral power fine. But the problem is the city's only 19.1% registered white voters when it comes to that.
Oh.
And even the white people call him the poppin' fresh doughboy. He's useless, although he's prefabricated the mold into any shape you want, because all you have to do is pop the roll package and he squeezes out.
He comes right out,
He's come with some really big messes. They hired a chief of police who was a woman, first woman chief of police, but the first chief of police in 41 years in Memphis. because in the hiatus, the mayors had found that they had much more control over the police department if they had a director of police who is a civilian. So he gets the first civil service chief in 41 years. She was about to be indicted in Atlanta until she resigned. She went to North Carolina, got in problems for crookedness down there, so they hire her up here, and she hasn't been here 2 weeks, and she gets her pistol stolen, and they claim that it was used in some crime 3 weeks later.
Oh, okay.
She said they had no firearms allowed, so she didn't think it would be appropriate to bring hers in. Hell, you're the chief of police. Why not?
Yeah.
And these restaurants are getting held up at gunpoint around closing time.
Oh, my goodness. So they
And we
they
have
don't
a sheriff
have a
who ran without
place.
Opposition to get a full
mm-hmm.
term. I don't have any problem with him being the sheriff, but the problem with that is in less than a month and a half, he's had three people die in his jail at the other end of the block he works from.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Get your jail
See,
in order and then talk about running the city. Now, that's the opposition.
Oh, my goodness. Well, just so we can't have that. We cannot have
no,
that. That is not a good model. That is not a good model for any place to follow. You know, we have too many people that are dying in prison.
Yeah, and we don't need to have this sexist, racist thing of saying, all of you black men need to withdraw from the race so we can get a black woman in. If she's fit to be in, then the people will elect her.
Yes, but, I mean, I have to agree with you. If it's not safe for a woman to be able to walk the street, I don't believe it's safe for a man to walk the street either. But, oh, boy.
We take our risk. That's what we do. And when I was a judge, by the way, I used to walk the streets. Hey, you, come over here. Man, who you? Get over here now. Oh, Judge, what time did I tell you to be in home? You got a curfew. You see me day after tomorrow at 10 a.m. You understand me? Who this to? I didn't ask you, did I? This is A and B conversation. But then again, 5 hours later, I might be talking to him and 15 other young men about how to be a man. See, this thing about being man is interesting. Young people work better when they have a cause or a purpose. And if you are a man or a woman, you look in the mirror to shave, brush your teeth, comb your hair, whatever you do every morning, you ask yourself, were you a man yesterday? Are you going to be one today? Are you preparing to be a better one tomorrow? And that gives you an immediate cause so you don't say, man, like with due respect, man, I'm 22. I ain't going to live to be 24, man. What do I care about? Well, that makes you an ideal candidate to be a hero, young brother, because that means you got nothing to lose in doing what you ought to do to protect where you live. You see, being a man basically means when the next Titanic goes down, you're supposed to get up and say, ma'am, you and your child have my seat on the lifeboat. I'll drown with the ship. And it's a hard thing to do, and it takes a lot of training. And there are a lot of young ladies that need to be taught some things, too. We don't need any more girl rillas running around acting a worse fool than the boys.
Well, that's true.
And we need
that's
to make
definitely
it
true.
All right. Yeah, women have – I have no problem with women being whatever kind of professionals they want to be, of a kind of office they're fit to hold and get elected to. But I do think that women need to focus on motherhood a little more, and men need to focus on protecting womanhood a lot more. It is our duty to make where we live a better, safer, more secure place filled with economic prosperity, sense of purpose, duty, honor, obligation, and accountability. It's our job to enforce public peace, dignity, and order, and be men and women of public peace who can be brave and courageous where necessary. And there is no earthly reason why a woman needs to put herself at risk when there are men who can step up to the plate and do what they ought to do. Now, that's just the way I look at stuff, and I'm not apologetic for that. Not at all.
No, well, you shouldn't be.
So
I want you to be true to, you know, be true to who you are. But let me ask you now, the New York City Mayor, Eric Adams, he wants cops to arrest people who appear to look mentally ill and homeless. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, problem with that is I've grown up in a lot of, I'm of age to have graduated from college in the 1960s before they were out. And I've seen people say, oh, your ordinary black person looks like he's mentally ill. So I don't like that kind of idea. Yeah, mental illness is a problem. But one of the things
is
that we need to stop promoting it. See, as I said before, humans work better when they have a purpose and a cause, and when you tell them the only thing they have to deal with is having a good time and there's nothing that they perceive as good time, then what are you doing with them? You give them a purpose and you give them something to focus on, and they tend to straighten up a bit. I did this thing where, taking advantage of Tennessee law over a 10-year period, I had just about everybody I sentenced mentally evaluated in depth and in great detail, and it was interesting what we found out. To a great extent, drugs and violence were the product of extreme suicidal ideation. You've heard of suicide by cop. Well, there's also suicide by neighbor. And a lot of times it's not about getting high. It's about trying to die. And I have all of these people who want an excuse for not focusing to say it's nobody's fault if they got a drug problem. Yeah, well, it may not be, but they certainly can focus and get the cause of I'm going to do better. And as far as does it work, well, over a 10-year period, they had a study in the state of Tennessee, and the statewide recidivism was the same 80% at the end of that 10-year period it was at the beginning, but in my courtroom, it dropped down to just 18%. So what did I do that separated my court and all of the rest of them in Tennessee? And that's what we will be getting an expanded version of. Give the youth a purpose and a cause. Show them how to implement that. Give them an opportunity to be self-sustaining. Understand that they need to be taught and adopted deep down in their souls that, yay, they can be fed a fish, but it is much better if they learn how to fish so they can feed themselves.
Sure, I agree. Now, as far as entrepreneurship, do you have anything in mind for entrepreneurship for young people?
Well, they need to be taught what that means, and they also need to be taught work ethic. Our young people do stuff, but for the most part, I've had disappointing results lately because they don't know what a work ethic is. Some do, but more and more don't. And even the ones that have professional degrees, like to paraphrase what somebody told the young lawyer one time, said you got hired because you got a high standing in your class.
Yeah.
But any fool can look up the law. We need somebody with common sense and the ability to see the big picture and where things fit in. And I'm running into that across the board because it is a problem when you raise a child to feel that they are entitled to get everything they want just because they want it without work. If you haven't put a work ethic in their soul, then you have a problem, a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to teach the youth the value of work, to appreciate their efforts. I think that the city needs to spend some of these billions of dollars that they waste on not even just a well-to-do, but certain entrenched people that make sure that something dribbles back down to the people that vote for this, meaning those who hold legislative or leadership positions. I think that what we need to do is to teach the people that working for self is a good thing. The city needs to take all of these billions of dollars that it is wasting on a few and start subsidizing small businessmen. We've got a situation here where the city puts all of its money in a bank known as First Horizon. It used to be First Tennessee. And under federal banking law, the accounts of a bank have to be backed up with a certain percentage of cash on deposit in their vaults or with the Federal Reserve. Now, what happens is since First Tennessee got everything, they had an enormous amount of cash on hand, and they had a lot of credit that they could extend, a lot of lines of credit, a lot of leverage that they could put on things, and a lot of loans that they could make. But they only loaned their money out to a select few. Now, that said, what happens is First Tennessee is now First Horizon. It's not even a Tennessee bank anymore. It's not even an American bank. For goodness sakes, it is a Canadian bank. So these fools are putting all of the city deposits in and enabling a Canadian bank when there are local banking institutions that need to be given the backup so they can be competitive about extending loans, mortgages, financing of small businesses, and all sorts of things. Now, people aren't thinking about that because they get the handout. Now, this is 34 years out of date, but it's a classic example. There was a development known as the Mud Island Housing Development. It was upscale. And when you went across a bridge in front of the pyramid, you got to a right angle intersection where there was a stop sign. The city sold the corner with the stop sign to a developer for $14,600, just that corner. He sold it back to the city for $6.8 million in less than 2 months. That was money that was spent under the table. They put a yield turn curve in there. Now it's a roundabout. But the other problem was, is under Tennessee law, when a developer of a housing development exceeds a certain population density, he has to donate part of the land to widen the roads that go through it. This developer didn't. He's supposed to pay for the construction or the revision of the roads. This developer didn't. The city of Memphis exercised eminent domain, took the strips of his property that were necessary, and paid for him to get reimbursed rather than donating, and then built the roads. You see, that's the kind of thing that has been going on. We had an $85 million pyramid down here. It was supposed to be on the opposite end of town for the same price, but twice as large. However, some of the usual conspirators had some property that they had secured closer to downtown on the opposite side. It was 7 feet below river level. So for the same amount of money, they built a pyramid half the size of the other one. The acoustics were horrible. Everybody went bankrupt except the people who were into real estate acquisition, management, development, construction material supply. They split $85 million. What did we do with it? We gave the whole thing free of charge, $1 a year, to Bass Pro. They've got the name written on it. You can see it for miles. The city wound up putting in the restaurants that were originally supposed to go in at the top, the elevators up the sides, and they maintain it, pay for the liability insurance and the upkeep and security, and they pay us $1 a year.
$1.
You see?
Wow.
$1.
Yeah.
And then we have a thing called Beale Street Landing. It was built and opened in 2014. The taxpayers paid $35 million to build that thing. It looks like a mound of earth with some grass growing over it and a giant catfish jungle gym outside. Well, we paid $35 million, and the developer was supposed to operate a gift shop, bar, and grill. He bailed on the city. He was supposed to pay the city $1 rental and 4% of his net, which is always zeroed out, by the way. And
yeah.
What happened is the city got stuck with a $35 million white elephant, and it can't operate a bar nor a grill. We gave a $28 million office building away to a nascent airline that people were trying to bring in here. It wasn't even incorporated. It never incorporated. But the developer sold the office building and pocketed a lot of money from it, and the city didn't even try to get it because the powers that be took a cut of the action. See, that's the way things run in Memphis.
Oh, my. Oh. Oh, my goodness.
It is disgusting, and somebody needs to clean it up.
Yes, well, you're definitely the man for it. Definitely,
yeah.
I mean, we see that from just the way how you were when you were a judge, that you were a no-nonsense judge, but you were also a fair judge.
Well, yeah, and being a judge wasn't the only thing I did in life. I was also a defense attorney. I ran the public defender's office before that, and I was the first black prosecutor in the history of the city. I worked for Equal Employment Opportunity Commission before that for the feds, and before that I worked at Poverty Law when I had a fellowship out of Howard University that I had in place so I could do that. Before that I went to UCLA Law School. I didn't do too badly there, and I was a playground director, and I was a substitute school teacher for the LA City School System on the junior and high school level. He had two students as a playground director that most people recognize. That's the late Barry White, who was the deep voice singer. And I remember him as a skinny little 12-year-old on the playground. Me and Lon Chappelle, now Dr. Chappelle, and Cliff Stewart, the late Cliff Stewart, most recently Dr. Clifford Stewart of Los Angeles, we ran that. And we had one other student who was the last person executed on California's death row, and we remember him as Tookie Williams, who co-founded the Crips.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's got all kinds of things going on there. I've dug ditches, loaded trucks as a teamster, been a member of AFL-CIO. Dues paying member, still am, with SAG-AFTRA, which is a different branch altogether, make-believe specialist, but I understand what it is to deal with life. I grew up in South Central L.A. Well, we didn't even call it South Central then. That was years later, but I was out of high school when they had the uprising in 1965. My girlfriend just lived a few blocks away from where it started. So I was very familiar with what was going on. We wound up setting up a black studies program at UCLA, and when I got in, we had exactly 145 full-time black students out of 62,000 full-time students. We had 145 blacks. The population of blacks was bigger in the 1940s than it was in the mid-1960s. But we did what we had to do. We got in a block of 250 more black students for 67, 68. And for 68, 69, we got in 250 more. So we increased the black population. That second group, we couldn't get people to do what they were supposed to do because they said, brothers, I'll quote one, brother, it's not that I don't appreciate the sacrifices all of you guys have made to help get me in here, but I can't afford to jeopardize my career. You'll have to go on without me, but I'll be there with you in spirit. Grab him. And we grabbed him. And he was so scared that it required two people to hold him up. Two brothers that played football held him up. Hell, I played football there for a while, but I didn't feel like making that a career, so I quit. I wound up getting an academic scholarship. But he got so scared, he peed on himself, had on some gray pants, and he wound up standing in a puddle of his own pee, and the brothers that were holding him said, yeah, man, and dropped him, and he fell down in it. As soon as he composed himself, he turned around and ran off on a dead run. scared and cowardly. And then in later years, he was supposed to be the expert on black militancy. Now, set up this black studies program at UCLA. We took over a building that was supposed to be condemned, but we got it back. Now the minority studies department occupies the biggest building on campus. It's known as Bunch Hall, named after a black man, Ralph Bunch, who was a UCLA graduate and the first high commissioner for the United Nations that was black.
Oh.
So we have that. We also recruited a number of people. I recruited John Huggins, Bunchy Carter, Jerome Pratt, as Geronimo, we know him as, Nathaniel Clark, Elaine Brown, who became chairwoman of the Black Panther Party by 1970, but it was going downhill by then. We had Gwen Goodloe and a number of other people, and we had a tussle with the US organization who was trying to take over the Black Studies program so they could teach USology, we called it. They had John Huggins and Bunchy Carter killed in the cafeteria, Campbell Hall, at high noon on one day, January 19th, I think it was, 1969. And they kicked in my office door on the third floor and put four bullet holes in the back of my chair. It was interesting. When LAPD got they went and got the acting chancellor of UCLA was a black man who was the vice chancellor. They went over and kicked the door in on a meeting he was having with visiting chancellors from European universities. Handcuffed him and marched him a mile across campus back to the scene with a riot gun poking in his back. Really embarrassing. So, yeah, I've seen it. It gets bad.
Yeah,
but
it does.
We prevailed, and a lot of things nowadays are myths about how things went down. It wasn't peaceful. But we got in some black folk, and the idea about getting us in was, will you maximize the fallout of your education to your respective community? And the people we got in, for the overwhelming most part, did that. A lot of them are dead now of old age, cancer, heart attack, you name it, overworked. But they did what they were supposed to do and brought something back to the hood. And they traveled all over the country, and done well. And that's what everybody was supposed to be doing. Nowadays, I don't get it. Everybody's scared of their own shadow, and we walk around and we are conversant with what we are told to think, and we think that way. And I talked to some of my friends, said, you know, my grandson was talking crazy. What is this about so-and-so? I said, man, it's the propaganda. He said, oh, yeah, I remember we were discussing that 55 years ago and what they were attempting to do. Now they've got people thinking in terms of the propaganda that they were running. And see, when you get your target to think like you want them to think, you won, even if they think they're defending against it.
Yes.
And that's what they've done to us. 55 years ago, we railed about people talking about men are toxic and the worst thing that can happen is for a father to be involved in raising his children. And then you got that mess out of the Johnson administration that they didn't intend to do what it did, but basically what it wound up being was setting up a new landscape where the more babies you had, the bigger your check was. Get the grandmamas to take care of the babies. You spend the check on what you want to spend it on. Meanwhile, the social worker would cut the check off if somebody was seen trying to play father. Two of the six or seven babies' daddies trying to be a daddy, and the check got cut off. And when I first started practicing law, that's what we did most of the time. Get the check cut back on. And then the poisonous things they had at some of the juvenile courts around the country where they were engaged in making money and generating future business by ruining family situations. We had all kinds of things going wrong. I can remember one court I wound up doing 5 days in jail recently for contempt of. It's been about 7 years ago. And what that was about is they had a racist idiot who was a lawyer down there sitting as a magistrate. He wasn't elected. He got appointed by a judge who dropped out of the sixth grade, who was not permitted to hear cases because of his educational deficiency. It was a 55-year-old black woman that was being threatened with jail by somebody who came out of nowhere who had stalked her 30-some years before. And this clown wanted to take time out for his golf game, and he didn't have time to set aside a warrant that wasn't even valid because it was rubber stamped and you couldn't tell who signed it. There was no affidavit of complaint, etc. under Tennessee law. Was null and void. The court didn't even have jurisdiction. Okay? He gave me 5 days that I wound up having to serve, but I'm glad I was able to finally get this woman's case dismissed. Somebody said she was the mother of his child. She only had one child, the child of the marriage. It was a boy, and the boy was in his 20s, and she'd been married 30-some years. And it was just disgusting what happened. And the first time I appeared in that bloody damn circus was less than a year and a half after it had been integrated so that black lawyers and defendants could come inside the courtroom. When I had an appearance, I had five clients. This fool called me the N-word, and I did go off on him.
Yes,
up
well,
in
that's
open court called me the N-word. And I had one of those big old-time recorders. I recorded it, and we had at it. But he wound up backing down when he found I was a lawyer instead of he actually said, boy, I thought you was a Negro on my docket. I said, don't you call me any Negro. And I called him a honky.
And
he called me the N-word before that, and we went gone round and round. So
that
was 50 years ago. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I remember one time, this was in the late 1970s. My law partner, a woman, by the way, and I were representing a defendant. And there were three other co-defendants. And the judge said, Mrs. and Mr. Brown and counsel for defense and the prosecution, would you approach the bench? Mr. Brown, is that an N that you two are representing on trial with these three white men?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
wow.
It was rough.
Yeah.
I can remember one time I had a young lady, 16 years old, beautiful young sister. She's a grandmother now. Her grandfather left her 80-some thousand acres of land that somebody had bamboozled her grandfather into renting to them for $15 a year for $80,000 acres of land. I worked up $25,000 plus 25% of the crop with a black corporate farmer, Tom Burrell, who's written some books. And when we got the injunction that they had gotten cleared up, and we go over to the landlocked property, was a 10,000 acre stretch, they had cut down trees and put boulders on the road so we couldn't get in there. Burrell called up his farm crew, and they brought tractors over and bulldozers, and we got the stuff out of the way. And I had a copy of the signed order certified in my briefcase, nothing else. And when the sheriff gets there, after somebody had to take a motorcycle down to the local gas station, we didn't have cell phones in, called the sheriff. I got a .357 in one hand, a .45 in the other, drawn down on some rednecks who got guns leveled at me. And the rest of our posse, we are armed too. The sheriff comes in. Guys, y'all put their muzzles down. No killing up in the air. So what the hell is going on? Sheriff, if you check in the briefcase, you will find an order signed by Chancellor so-and-so returning control of this property to my client. And these people are trespassing. Let me see. Alan, you boys better get out of here. These fellas got the right of the situation. Y'all trespassing.
Oh, my goodness.
Safe.
Yes.
And I listen to these clowns pontificate about white supremacy. I've seen it. When I was a child, my mother worked as a librarian at Tuskegee Institute for a short while. And I can remember us coming back from Tuskegee Institute to Jackson, Tennessee. And we made the mistake of being too near one of these sundown towns at the wrong time. And these clowns took us three shots. Well, five, actually, at the old DeSoto my old man was driving. One bullet hole went through the rear passenger door of the DeSoto on the left. It crossed over. It hit this bottle of Coca-Cola that I had on my knee. My mother had asked me to hold while she went in the glove compartment. She didn't panic. She just told me to get out on the floor. And two more bullet holes went through the car. We had to get patched up. See, it used to be rough. I can remember my old man saying, I hate this. I hate this. And everybody had a picnic basket with fried chicken in it and a cooler, or rather you had a canvas water bag on the front bumper to keep it cool, and you drank the cool water and you ate the fried chicken 2 days old. And they had a green book put out by Sinclair Oil that the old man always bought for 25 cents. And with it, you could find out the addresses and phone numbers of all of the black establishments or other establishments that would let you eat or stay there. Greyhound bus because they'd let you eat in the Greyhound bus restaurant, even in the deep south. Okay. So, yeah, there are some things. I remember I wasn't born in the South. I was born in Washington, D.C., grew up in L.A., kindergarten through law school, but there was that period 1 through 5 when my mother was in Jackson, Tennessee. My father was getting a law degree from Howard, and he was working in Chicago when he finished that, so we all moved out to California, 1952, I think it was. And that was what it was. I can remember a lot of awful stuff. I can remember when I was in L.A., I had a paper route when I was in elementary school, delivering Sunday papers. And we'd always go down to what is now Western Avenue, which is deep off in the hood. And about three blocks from where I used to stop at this donut shop, they'd let us guys have the donuts free because they were just heating the grease up. They used to have signs out with this rental property saying, no colored, no Irish allowed. And by the way, if you want to taste one of my products, Judge Joe Brown Barbecue, JJBBBQ.com, you can go three blocks away from there to 79th and Western down in the hood. It's on the corner. It's called D's, as in Delta. That's Chef Damon. D's Original Takeout Grill. You get pork, beef, poultry, lamb, goat, all kinds of other things in there. It's great stuff using the product. Now, that said,
what made you come up with your barbecue sauce?
Well, I've been doing it for a long time. The old man was from Kansas City, and he used to like barbecue, and there was a place I remember when I was a kid when we visited relatives in Kansas City, we'd go through. It had a sign up, you don't need no teeth to eat my beef. And he used to make up this very good sauce, and he would go dig a hole in the ground, literally a hole in the ground, and he would take the grill from the oven and put it over the hole on four bricks to keep it up off the ground and put charcoal down there, and would do the barbecue that way. Good. And I moved on, and we had a team in Memphis called Porcus MD, and the sauce was always award-winning. And in the Memphis and May Barbecue Contest, there are 1,500 entrants that have to be invited. And the blind taste testing stuff went on, and we, I think, 1 year third place in International Ribs, and 1 year I just threw together some sauce, a prototype of what you can get now. Took about 2 hours and got second place out of 1,500 entrants. Could have done better if I'd had a chance to cook it up a bit, but it is what it is.
Yes.
So we do
but
that.
Now you can also you can get your barbecue sauce on the internet. They can order it.
Yes.
JJB,
Judge Joe Brown, barbecue. JJB, that's one B, two more Bs, BBQ.com. And it's already on the shelves in California. And speaking of sisters, the entity that does these chicken links, hot or mild, smoked or raw, is a sister, and she runs the only USDA certified black-owned meatpacking plant in California. So we do business with a woman on that. So, no problem there.
That is true.
One of the best lawyers I've run into is a good sister. I'll give you her name, but she's a magistrate now, Taylor Estridge.
Okay.
So I don't have any problems with that. She was a zealous lawyer when I hired her. Now she's moved up. Judge Bernice Donald, federal district court judge for the Sixth Circuit, senior judge, retired. I was her mentor. All right. Somebody I thought would have been much better than this Kanye. What is her name? Not Kanye, Jackson Brown, Brown Jackson or whatever it is, somebody much better than her on the same Second Circuit Court of Appeals, the wife of a good friend of mine, now deceased, Roger E. Clifton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, see, there are all kinds of things going on out there. It's not a woman thing. It's not a man thing. It's just where you happen to be in life. So right now, see, I can walk down in the hood and grab somebody and say, man, what's up? I said, I'm Judge Joe Brown. Oh, Judge, hell, man, can I take a picture, man? Yeah. Damn. You see, these other folk can't do that because they're hoity-toity. What is it, boule? And they sit on leather sofas in the bars of five-star hotels sipping Chablis like, Van, what do you hear is going on down in, they still call it the hood? Oh, my God. And you see, they have these kind of conversations, and they're not in touch with the people.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of people that is not in touch and don't want to be.
Mm-mm. And Memphis, to a great extent, looks like the fantasy you see in Atlanta Housewives. You know, they have those boule parties. Well, I had an ex-wife who was a fan, so I unfortunately had to see a lot of it. She insisted on showing it on one of these small TVs next to where my computer station was in the kitchen, just so she could spite me, but that's another thing.
Well, Judge Joe, now, we have some callers that had their hands up with you. Is that okay? Okay, let me bring the first one in. Okay, area code 732. Do you have a question or a comment for Judge Joe Brown?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me, Internet?
Yeah,
I hear you.
Oh, okay, I was trying to make sure I had unmuted my phone. But anyway, highest exaltation to you, Antoinette, and to you too, Judge Joe Brown. But
Judge,
I have a question. When you mentioned policing our own neighborhoods, you know, my son polices his neighborhood, and I know I better start, well, maybe not this neighborhood, but I don't want to be here too much longer. But that's what I want to do, start policing my own neighborhood somewhere else. What is one of the first things you do to get started with that? Do you know?
Well, first off, the mayor would set up a militia. He's authorized to do that under Tennessee law, so we can get that in place. And then they say the way it's defined under Tennessee law is they have drill once a month. and we would have training once a month. Hell, I could conduct that myself. And when we have training, we'd go out, we'd have something that would be uniform so the people could be identified, and we'd go out and deal with the youth. Now, I will say this, oftentimes when you've got guys to provide the backup or the muscle, so to speak, you can get a woman to do something that still has an impact. And that is, when women get present, that same old thing that used to happen when guys are clowning and somebody says, hey, man, there's a lady present. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am, I didn't see you here. I know some lady cops. One of my strongest supporters retired as head of homicide. She's actually from L.A., but she moved to Memphis. Captain Carmen Johnson, and she was commander of the Homicide Bureau before she became commander of the Sex Crimes Bureau. So she's a tough lady, but we can hang, you know, and yeah, there are things women can do in this too. See, both parties can do this, but it doesn't help out if we don't also do something about putting some training in the young girl's head, like, lady, young lady, act like one. You don't need to go around here trying to play girl, really, and outdance to the guy. That doesn't work too well.
Yeah. I have another question, too. When you said, like, if you were walking the streets and you would see one of the young men, and you say, but listen, you know you should be in the house such and such. Now, when you did that, were you planning at that time or knew you was going to run for mayor or...
When I did what now?
When you said you would be out walking and if you seen a young man...
Oh, yeah. Look, a woman, the late Dr. Barbara Cooper that I met in 1974, she was with the Title I Committee on the Board of Education. She came to me about 2.5 years ago and said, Joe, you're going to have to come out of retirement. She died this year at 93 when she fell, but she set up my exploratory committee and my initial committee and chaired the meeting. So, yeah, I had been saying this for quite some time. In fact, I was probably the first one to actually get out and do something about it. But we have a house Negro here who is a professor of journalism at one of the local colleges, and he, whatever, had an argument with me about 30-some years ago. He was telling me that if you wanted to advance, you had to be somebody that was non-threatening to white people.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him he was a house Negro. He was saying he would get far in life and I wouldn't get anywhere. Well, actually, I got a lot farther than he did. And he has hated me ever since.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Antoinette, if it's not too much, I have one more. But if you want me to wait, I could wait until you call someone else.
Okay, I'll be right back with you, okay?
Okay.
Let me go on to the next caller.
All right.
Okay, area code 336. Area code 336.
Greetings.
Christopher.
Sister Antoinette.
There you are.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. I can hear you. You're loud and clear.
Thank us. Thank you so much for having Judge Joe Brown on tonight. This is a special time, family. Judge Joe Brown, you a trip. I just love you. I just love you. Do you know, sir, and I'm proud of you, and I'm grateful for you, and I'm grateful to have this opportunity before I leave this planet to say this. Do you know, Judge Joe Brown, this is Mama Bonfire AZ. My birth given name is Robert Lee Paris. I need to make that known. Judge Joe Brown, you took me back to when I was a little girl going back and forth through Texas, Oklahoma, with that green book and the chicken on the bus and the greyhound bus at that. Certain places that we were looking at green book on my dad and my mom, and you took me down there, and Judge O'Brown, I'm going to be nice, but you have inspired me tonight. Sir, you have given me confirmation or many confirmations to move forward with something that I've been working on since I came to the planet. My Earth Day is the 1st of July, and I believe yours is the 5th, is it not?
That is correct. Yes, ma'am.
I love you. So I'll let somebody else, because there's so much that I want to say, but you have given this 71 going on year old elder a B12 shot, a double dose. And I thank us, Judge Joe Brown, and congratulations. You kicked they over there, okay? You do what you came to the planet to do, sir. You a trip. I love you. I love us. Thank us. Okay, let somebody else in, Sister Antoinette, because I want to keep it nice. I'm ready to get raw right now, but I'm not. Thank us. I love you, Judge Joe Brown.
Thank you, ma'am.
Erico 740. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you, Sister Antoinette?
I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing well today. Doing very well.
Good.
It's an honor and pleasure to be on the line with yourself and greetings, Mr. Joe Brown.
Thank you, sir.
I followed the career pretty steadily. I'd say this. Thank you very much for your service in cleaning up the, for lack of a better word, the pedophilia that was going on down there in the South. You were working some projects back in the day that I read up on and listened to you talk about. So thank you for that. And this is really a great thing. I didn't know 2 months ago that you were running for mayor. So you have my support. I'm Ohio, and hopefully I can move down to that area and rub some elbows with some folks and get some of those programs up and going that you're talking about and help clean up the city down there. It would be nice. Well, good luck, sir, and thank you. I'm going to go on mute and continue listening.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Appreciate that much. Try JJB2023.com. Check it out.
And she's also in the description, y'all. But, you know, we want to donate to Judge Joe Brown's campaign, and you can also do that through his website, JJB2023.com, because we want to give him support. And Sister Iskar, you can go come back on and finish your questions. If anyone else has a question or comment, press the number one, and you can address the judge really quick. Sister Iskar?
Yes, thank you, Antoinette. Yes.
You're welcome.
Judge's eminent domain. When they did the eminent domain, and then they took it off in some places. Like, if I don't know if it was because they didn't get to use the property or the land. And what did they call that when it returned back?
Okay. They still have eminent domain everywhere. It's not popular to use it these days. The basis for eminent domain is this. Let me back up a little bit further. It's shocking to a lot of first-year law students, but in America, you can't own anything tangible. What you own is the intangible right to the exclusive use of something vis-a-vis anybody else. You can't own a car, but you own the right to use it. You own the right to the property that the car represents. The same thing with land. You can't own the land, otherwise it would be the United States or the United Territories of John Jones, Swartz, Oscar, Thomas, and whatever it may be. But you can own the exclusive right to the use of the land. But that exclusive franchise to you comes from the state. So when the state says that it's no longer in our best interest for this person to have the exclusive use of the thing, they can take it. And when they take it, they have to compensate you for the loss of use of the thing. Now, that also extends to a lot of other stuff like criminal law, for example, or what they used to have, for those of us who are old enough to remember it, the draft. You, along with the territory and the resources in the territory, belong as a resource to the United States of America. So what happens is when it's in the best interest of the country as a whole, they can take you and put you in the military and make you charge a machine gun nest, even if you get wiped out or wounded process. When you have a criminal charge, it's not up to somebody to be the complainant. The complainant is simply the best witness. It's up to the state. And every indictment in every state and in the United States reads something like, on or about such and such day, John Doe did, against the public peace, dignity, and order of the state of X, commit the following alleged act or acts. And if a person doesn't want to be a witness for the state, they can be compelled to be one as a material witness. They can either be locked up until they give the expected testimony, or a material witness bond can be set on them.
Okay, but with the eminent domain, there was a certain point when they gave it back to the people, right?
No, they still have it. There is eminent domain because title to all property comes from the state. And they grant the title to individuals for a specific use because they say a person will put more into a thing if he has a selfish interest. But sometimes, let's say when we want to build a railroad through here or a highway through here or a parking lot or a reservoir, the interest of the people trump that singular individual, so we confiscate his property rights. And we compensate him for his loss of use of the thing. Nobody owns anything in America but the exclusive right to use the thing. Not the thing itself, just the exclusive use of it.
I guess that's why even if you pay your mortgage or house in lieu, if you still have to pay tax because you don't own it.
The tax isn't because of your ownership. A governmental entity, a culture, a society cannot function if it cannot sustain itself by having the economic wherewithal to do what it needs to. All civilizations and cultures have had tax. In fact, Jesus was born in Nazareth. Why? Because his family was going there to be counted, because the king decided he wanted to count his people to see what his tax base was going to be.
Mm-hmm. And my last one, Anthony, then I'm finished. And what do you think about the cryptocurrency? It's not a currency, I give it another name. Tokenized. What do you think about the crypto, what they're trying to do with that? The banks.
The crypto thing? Let me tell you what the problem is with crypto. Cryptocurrency.
Okay.
All right. You got a power outage and your phone runs dead after it runs out of battery. How do you access your wherewithal?
You don't.
That's the problem. That's why I don't think they're going to allow it right now to go to cryptocurrency, which some people are trying. See, cryptocurrency is valuable because people think it has value. The real establishment of value is the power of the government that issues the currency. If the country or the state or whatever that issues the currency decides to issue stamped popsicle sticks if they're powerful enough and they can guarantee that the sticks aren't too easy to counterfeit, then those sticks have a value. Actually, it's rarer than gold, or at least harder to come by, is the paper that they use to print U.S. currency on. So U.S. currency has a value. The problem with cryptocurrency is that it depends upon an artifice. It's not backed by the U.S. government. It is something that people can buy, sell, trade, use for profit, or as a medium of exchange if people decide to accept it. Currency, if it is issued by the United States, is valid for all commercial transactions in the country.
Okay.
See, the government backs it.
So, yeah, I don't like the crypto. I don't like it either. And it's really not even currency, like you just said, right? Because currency is backed by, for all to use. What did you say?
What I said was cryptocurrency has a problem with the fact that it is almost exclusively electronic. You can't issue any coinage on cryptocurrency because you have counterfeit laws, and that's under Article 1 of the Constitution of the United States. So the problem is that it is electronic, and we can't guarantee that our phones will stay charged up and active or that the energy net stays up and running. We can't guarantee that a solar storm, a very severe one, might not wipe out all records.
And so I think you said something about it's not currency, so it doesn't something.
In other words, it's not official currency, so you cannot compel somebody to accept it for a transaction.
Not official, okay.
Legal currency is legal for and appropriate for any transaction in this country. And as a matter of fact, since it's the American dollar, it's valid anywhere in the world.
Thank you so much. You know, I'm on Facebook trying to keep it out of the system. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, just now, after you get everything cleaned up in Memphis, what effect do you think that it'll have on Tennessee and the rest of the country?
What's that now?
After you clean up, Memphis, what do you think that you're?
Oh, sure, it becomes a model. In other words, we have the Colorado River, Columbia River, we've got Tennessee River, Ohio has rivers, we've got the Mississippi River. We could use all of these rivers to generate hydroelectric current without having to build a dam across some of these large rivers. If we deal with some of the modern technology that we have, we can power the whole country electrically and in a green fashion without having to worry about coal or oil or natural gas.
And what about the water?
Go ahead.
What about the waters that is being poisoned all over the country?
That is a problem.
Yes, that's a big problem.
These things wouldn't poison the water because let's go out in the Mississippi. You've got a toll, which is, 600-700 ton vessel that's pushing 8,000 ton barges for a total of 40,000 tons worth of load going down the river. And while you've got that there, these hydroelectric generators, the type I'm talking about, they are modular, and they look like large lower sections to outboard motors, and they can be suspended under rafts, barges, pylons, They can be propped up on the bottom. They can be brought up and down for servicing. They have minimal effect on the flow of the river, and they don't get prone to silt buildup or anything like that. So it would have a minimum evasive effect on the river. Of course, you'd have to cooperate with the Corps of Engineers, Army Corps of Engineers, to get those things set up so you don't run afoul of navigation requirements in various lakes. But what they have done, for example, if you're visiting Vegas, go check out Hoover Dam. It is an awesomely huge thing. And that was from the late 20s, early 1930s, so that you could dam up a body of water and the acceleration that it would get going down the dam face or down the spillway would be able to drive turbines that, hydroelectric turbines that provide energy from San Diego, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Reno, Flagstaff, Arizona, Albuquerque, New Mexico, you name it. The grid takes the currents from various places.
Yes. Yes, it does. But, I mean, you know, the poisoning of the water is something that, you know, has been in effect for a long time, and it's just cleaning it up, even with the infrastructures. So, in Tennessee, in Memphis, does your infrastructure needs to be restored?
Oh, yes. Everybody in the city has a damaged car from the potholes and the street debris, and they haven't done anything in years. We can't have one of these winter storms where it ices up because they don't spend the money for sand or salt to put out. We've got a lot of problems going on here that are because the money is getting siphoned away so people can steal it. They won't call it that, but that's what it amounts to.
Now, do you have a plan for that?
I detailed it at some length. We got a new district attorney, a woman who just lost. Her name was Amy Wyrick, Yale Law Review, Harvard Law Review, Stanford Law Review out in California, and other sources, including the Tennessee Supreme Court, had declared her probably the most corrupt prosecutor in the United States. It seems she personally has more findings of prosecutorial misconduct against her as an individual than any DA's office anywhere in the country has collectively over the same period of time.
Oh, wow.
So we've got a new DA.
Like you have a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah, we have got a new DA. I mean, the woman came to me 27, 28 years ago when she first started. And she wanted me to take a transfer from another division. She said it was a minor drug offense. And she wanted to drop charges against a female co-defendant. And this guy was supposed to plead guilty to 1 year upfront, unsupervised probation with his record expunged at the end of the year. Well, I agreed to hear it, but I said we're going to have a hearing on the matter. She wanted to protest that. We went into the hearing. I looked at all the reports. I was noting carefully that nobody had mentioned drugs to me at that time, even what they were. So I had Metro Narcos send their captain down the next day. And when we got into it, it was 4 kilos of pure heroin, 4.5 kilos of pure cocaine, about 3,000 or 4,000 hits of crystal meth, about 1,500 hits of LSD, about 3,500 quaaludes, and $887,000 in cash seized after a 4.5 year operation to make this happen. And they had all of this recorded on wire and everything else. It was a perfect bust, and she was going to let it go for 1 year upfront probation. That's life in the penitentiary for the feds, in 60 years in the penitentiary for the state. See, that's what I'm talking about. This kind of thing just went on, and it's just unseemly. for this kind of lawlessness to be perpetrated.
Yes. I might as well. So it sounds like you have a lot of in-house cleaning that you're going to have to do when you first get
in. Oh,
yes.
They had a famous sting operation where a lot of the local politicals, black and white, wound up going to jail and doing time. It was called the Tennessee Waltz. I guess we need a Memphis boogie to back that up and catch a few more so people get the idea that it's not just your turn to steal the gravy. It's your turn to do right.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, we know that you're the man for the job. Now, tell me, what is it that we can do to help you?
Send contributions, jjb2023.com. Go there.
Okay. And also to tell others, if we know other people that are in Tennessee, that we support people.
Please tell them. Please tell them. See, what they're trying to do is the news media is trying to ignore me.
Yes.
Like I said, they set up a poll, straw poll, and they got quite a few votes in that poll, somewhere close to around 15,000. And I got 47% of the vote count out of 10 candidates, and the next highest person was 36%. They didn't like that at all because it backfired on them. They just don't want me known because there's too much money involved. See, Ford Motor Company is putting in a factory 35, 40 minutes from downtown Memphis where they're going to be employing 27,500 people inside of 5 years, which since the town nearest only has 5,200, if you take the average number of dependents and spouses or significant others, and you add in what you need for pharmacies, grocery stores, movie houses, barber shops, things like that, you need a town of about 150,000 to 250,000. And somebody's going to make a fortune building that town in the next 5 years. So a lot of people around here are lining up trying to use inside information and make a lot of money. We had the mayor of one county, Tipton County, bought 550 acres where the downtown center is going to be. And we have all of the hot shots around here trying to angle on getting property. We have the comptroller of the state and one of the leaders of the local NAACP, the residents, had a lawsuit pending against the state comptroller for misappropriating funds and threatening to revoke the city charter. And these guys got a settlement agreement signed off on it, and the citizens are upset and mad now because what happens is the people that had stolen from them for 20 years get away scot-free, and they wound up having to pay for it and get nothing out of the deal. See, that kind of thing goes on. And then they haven't thought about transporting the stuff by barge from the world's largest barge unloading facility here in Memphis on President's Island, taking these barges down to New Orleans, putting them on ocean-going barge transports to the Mediterranean where they're distributed in Europe or through the Suez Canal into Asia or the other way around. It cuts off about 9,000 miles from the trip of sending it from Japan to Los Angeles to Long Beach Harbor and then putting it on a train to get it to Memphis. So they haven't even thought about these things. And people have been trying to get in here, but the powers that be don't want that because they wouldn't be big fish in a medium pond. They would be very small fish in a very large pond.
Oh, my goodness.
If I may ask Antoinette.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
What is how does the price of land run in Tennessee? Is it very, very high most places, or does it have a wide range?
it has a wide range, but they're trying to get this Ford factory set up in a rural area where the land can be acquired for dirt cheap, rather than down here in Memphis where there was an initial interest. We have a couple of factory complexes that already have the reinforced concrete floors and set up for heavy machinery. John Deere, for example, and Firestone, they didn't want it here because the local folk that are in these things wouldn't be able to acquire the properties for what they could. One of the scams they do is to buy city property from the city with zoning variances allowing certain things to be done that are voted on by the city council, and then once they buy the stuff for dirt cheap, they lease it back to the city.
Okay, so
and
within,
they get to build the structure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with individuals, what I've been looking for years now is a few acres of land. I want to grow hemp, and I want to be somewhere where people fight, you know, and it doesn't seem like there's many people fighting anymore. Everybody just lets the people do whatever.
Well, if you want to do subsistence farming, welcome to it, but there is the distribution and the sales aspect, unless you just want to use it for personal reasons, but there is the possibility that you could do it for commercial development. Also, the distinct possibility it might be very useful to put solar array farms on it, and you can get paid for that in addition to whatever else you do with it.
So is the land less expensive in the country?
Oh, a lot less expensive in the country.
And how's the weather?
Hey, you trying to get here, aren't you?
I want to go somewhere. I hope where the weather's warm at and the land is cheap, and I could grow my hemp.
Well, let's
she's up on the East Coast, Judge Doe.
I get it, but let's put it this way. The property values are much better here than they are where you probably are. It's cheap. The other thing is the weather is seasonable. It gets hot in the summer, but not ridiculously swelteringly hot. And in the winter, we no longer have winters where we had snow on the ground from late December through March. We have an occasional dusting of snow, maybe 3 or 4 days out of the year where it snows, but that might be in April as well as February. So you can't tell.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like
weather is changing.
It does sound like up here, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me say this. Let me give you a forecast that I can bring up real quickly. Okay. Low today is 48. High was 59. All right.
Oh,
tomorrow,
wow.
55, 46. But then Thursday, 47, 36. Friday, Saturday, 41 high, low 28. Sunday, next Sunday, not this one coming up, but next week, high 36, low of 25. See, it drops up and down, but it was that way last week, and then it went back to 74 with a low of 62. So it's going up and down. The trees don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I know.
Sounds like up here, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, but we have didn't go up to 74 with us, though. But we got up
here
to 60.
Here it was 65.
Yeah, that's what I said. We got up in the 60s. But we didn't make 74.
Wow.
Oh, and the leaves are still dropping.
They're dropping heavily around here.
Yeah, they're still falling. They're not done yet. Every time you get them up, they come right back down. There's some more to come. Well, Judge Joe, he's off, and he also has seasonings also.
Really? Well, you have to get it over the internet.
Yes, in California, they're putting it on the, they're beginning to stock some of the grocery store shelves out there. But you can get it, and I would suggest the three-pack is probably the most economical. I won't lie about it. Most people say it's the best they've ever tasted, and frankly, I would say you wouldn't do wrong if you took one bottle and tried thinning it out 50-50 with beer or malt vinegar. Be easier to cook with that way, and frankly, I like it thinner, but it's good stuff. It's not ketchup-based. And I think, without undue modesty, it's probably the best you will have ever bought.
So it's not tomato-based?
It's got stuff in it.
Oh, right, you can't tell. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, it qualifies as health food, places like Sprouts or Whole Foods,
really?
Stuff like that. Yes.
Okay.
So you'll like it. And we even have a drink. It's called a Hot Mary. You ever had a Bloody Mary? Well, instead of using tomato juice or V8 with vodka and ice and put some Tabasco in it, you just bend down the barbecue sauce, put the vodka and ice in, and a sprig of celery. And we will have it available. It's rather regular now, but there's also OG, they call it, and hot/spicy.
Well, do you have a non-alcoholic one?
Oh, yeah. That was just the drink recipe. If you wanted a, I guess you'd get a virgin Bloody Mary and don't put vodka in it.
Yeah.
But, like I said, malt vinegar works fine to cut it with. If you want a recipe, here's one for you. Take your beef ribs, your shoulder, whatever it may be, your beef brisket. Let's just take beef brisket or shoulder. What you do, cut some crisscross slices in it so the seasoning gets down in it. You get yourself any kind of Italian dressing, light, creamy, it doesn't make any difference what. You want the spices in it or get Italian spices, but it works if you just get Italian dressing. And get yourself some sort of flavored honey. So what you're going to do is slather the stuff down with the Italian dressing, put your flavored honey, smear it over there, then you have a container, a large container of paprika, dump a third of it out, fill it back up with the barbecue powder, shake it up, get it mixed well, hit what you have very heavy on the bottom of it, the top of it. If you have another item like burgers or something like that, or if you're doing ribs, you just have to do the bottom of the bottom rib, then you put stuff heavy on the top, put the next one bottom side down, the excess sticks to it, and you just do it until you stacked it all up. If you're doing ribs, beef, or pork, cut them in half because they're more manageable. You can get these things that you stack your dishes up in that help out greatly. And what you're going to do is you're going to brown them first fat side down for a short period of time until it gets lightly brown. Then you turn them over, brown the meat portion. And then what you do is you move them down from the fire. If you have a barrel all the way down to the end, you might want to put something to keep the fire from spreading down there. And you let them cook with the heat. What you do is you don't let the heat get much over 210, 250. You don't want it to fry. If it starts sizzling, take it off, let it cool down, put it back on. But ideally, look at the thermometer you got inside your cooker or with your cooker and keep it where that is supposed to be, 200 to 250, 180 to 250. Takes about 4.5 to 5 hours for it to cook, and it's very tender. You don't keep basting it. That over-seasons it. What you can do is cut some where you've got just a little of the seasoning in there and mostly malt vinegar or vinegar. And if you char it a little bit because you are incautious or inattentive, what you do, take it off, let it cool down, baste that, soften it up, put it back on. But don't keep spreading sauce on it. That over-seasons it. So when you get through, what you will wind up having is kind of a glazed but dry dish. And you can have the table sauce, which I would suggest that you either use as is from the bottle, or you can thin it down half and half with either beer or malt vinegar. And you're good to go.
Okay.
We will be having cookers that will replace your home range so you can do this while you're gone without burning anything.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. That is very, very good. Now, how's it going? How's it going now with the race? Anyone dropped out or anything?
Well, no, they haven't. As a matter of fact, most of these people probably won't even file. They can't even pick up a qualification petition until May 2023.
Mm-hmm.
The election is in October 2023. So we're getting a jump on it.
Well, that's good. That's really good.
Frankly,
what?
I don't want my children or grandchildren to want to leave the town. I want them to be here, and also for all of my friends and associates.
Yeah.
Make it so your kids want to stay and so do your grandkids. Make it the place for people to come. It can be that kind of place.
Yeah. Now, is Memphis originally black city?
Is it originally what?
A black city. You know, black people city, you know, was that an original Negro town, or however you want to say it?
It's interesting. A guy came here more than 120 years ago. He became known as Boss Crump. And W.C. Handy, the black jazz musician, did a song about it. Boss Crump was sent here by the most wealthy white plantation owner in Mississippi to protect his part black son who was getting his property stolen. Boss Crump determined that the best way to stop that from happening was to control politics. So he organized the Lincoln Republicans, and black folk in Memphis and Shelby County always voted Republican up through the 60s. So Crump never could get a white majority, but he got a large white minority, and he put it with the black bloc vote, and he can control politics in Memphis and in West Tennessee, in the whole of Tennessee. So in 1968, when they had the voting rights enforcement provision put in, Tennessee was exempt because it had never deprived black folk of voting. Now, there was always a brokerage system in place where they had black bloc voters. Now you see it where blacks get paid to have people on sample ballots. And these people pay a lot of money to get on those ballots, and the black bloc vote is delivered. So it was always a place where blacks were prominent. Now, granted, when I was first a prosecutor, I saw charges where I'd have some old brother who wanted a plea bargain, and I'm working with his attorney. They'd have charges like colored person refusing to remove from sidewalk for passage of white person. That was a crime.
My.
Colored person committing reckless eyeballing against a white person. In other words, you looked them right in the eye. And this one, maybe they need to revive it, quote, acting too colored in public, unquote. People got jail sentences for that. Yeah. So anyway, it's been a town where there's always been a high black population. At one point, we were the largest majority black city in America. Now we are the largest predominantly black city since we have a very high percentage of Latinos or Hispanics, as it is, who have decided to live here also. But we still hold overwhelming percentage of registered voters.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we don't do what we ought to do with that.
No, we don't.
That
well, lots of people. Yes, but people don't believe in the vote too much anymore. I mean, look at all that's been going on. I personally believe that presidents are not voted in, that they're selected. That they're selected even before we go to the polls.
Presidents were never voted in. What's supposed to happen, since most people don't really know these individuals, is there is an electoral college that you can vote for.
Yes.
And every state gets a certain number of people on this electoral college. An electoral college is supposed to select the president. It used to be that the state legislative bodies selected the U.S. senators, not the people. And the only thing the people could vote for was representatives in the House of Representatives. Now, that was modeled on the Roman government, where they had the House of Plebes, who were commoners. They had the Senate, who were an aristocracy. And then they had the administrators, who were appointed by the Senate. And then you had the emperor, who came in. Now, that said, you can vote for electors who get to vote for the president. So that's the way it is. It's like you vote for legislators who can pass legislation. You vote for electors who can select the president.
Yeah.
The president is, in essence, the chief executive officer of the country. He functions as a CEO.
Yes. Yeah, because they have the United States as a corporation.
It's not a corporation.
But it's registered as one because it's registered here in Delaware.
No, it's not registered. It's not registered as a corporation. The United States of America is a nation state. A nation state has a territory, a population that lives in the territory, and a government that controls the interaction between the population and the territory for the most productive results. A corporation is a declaration by a state that such and such business entity is a fictional person. The government is not a fictional person. It contains persons who may be real or fictional, a territory and a governing body. So it itself is a sovereign entity. Like in England, the sovereignty rests with the monarchy. In America, the sovereign entity is the people. But a corporation is a theoretical. Well, let's put it this way. It's a fictional person created by a state. That's what they used the 14th and 15th Amendments for a long time, is to empower corporate entities. But the government itself is not a corporation. It's not a fictional person. It is a triumphant entity consisting of a territory and its resources, a population, and a government that maximizes the fruitful result of the people in the territory interacting. Political science one.
Okay.
If that makes an explanation.
Yes, it does.
So you said it's still a union? I know back with John Hanson, it was called, was it in the United Union of the Union then? But I didn't know.
No,
it
was. Go ahead. It was called. It's like the pronouns or the verbs. The United States are united in their determination that there should be no slavery. After the Civil War, when the matter was determined with a lot of bloodshed, it became a singular rather than a plural. The United States is of the opinion that slavery is intolerable. You see the difference? Our changes to is. Mm-hmm. And instead of multiple states being looked at as a multiplicity, so you use the R, you make it a singularity, indivisible, one nation, indivisible, and it becomes the United States is. That's after the Civil War. Most people don't realize this, but more people died during the American Civil War than have in all of the rest of the wars combined. Gettysburg, where Lincoln delivered his famous address afterwards, 47 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new, et cetera, et cetera. In 3 days, finishing up on the 4th of July, 1863, there were some 82,000 people who were casualties. Now, that tops out as the most costly battle in U.S. history. The Battle of the Bulge, there were about 80-some thousand casualties, but not nearly as many as dead folk because modern medicine had improved. And the Bulge, or Battle of the Ardennes, as they might say, that was several weeks long from December through toward the end of January, not just 3 days, mm-hmm. if that ad sheds any light on it. Some people say they need to scrap the Constitution. The question begs itself then, what did they replace it with? And then you get into the Constitution as neutral. A lot of folk love basketball. They are freaks by and watching NBA stuff. But you have to understand the first black man to be hired by in the NBA was by the Lakers. It was a gentleman named Don Barksdale who ran track and played football, not basketball, at UCLA. He was hired in 1947. Now, black folk dote on NBA and go out and waste a lot of time practicing free throws and layups, but the NBA is like the United States. The rules are neutral. It's just how they are played and what your team looks like and what the personnel look like who are playing the game. If you've got a crappy team, you get crappy results. You get a better team and a coach, things come out all right. So the rules don't change. The rules remain the same. It's the crew that plays changes. And that's the same thing with the United States. As far as political instruments go, the Constitution of the U.S. is not a bad instrument. It's probably one of the best constitutions ever promulgated. People say, it's corrupt. They call black folk three-fifths of a person. Nowhere in the Constitution does it mention race. What it says is, in Article 1, for purposes of apportioning representation in the House of Representatives, every 10 years a census shall be conducted. For purposes of this apportionment, three-fifths of all persons who are held in slavery or involuntary servitude shall be counted toward that number. That's why, for example, I've had five censuses I've participated in as an adult that I've had to fill out, and this is the first one that didn't ask whether you were a citizen and what your parent status was. Why is that? Well, California, New York, for example, if you don't ask whether this person is a citizen, you don't ask whether or not they can vote. So you simply take that individual and you lump them in with the total of people who live in that state, which determines whether or not New York or California or Illinois or Texas or Florida pick up representation in the House or they lose it. But since they can't vote, it's they get counted toward establishing representation, even though they can't vote for the representative. By the way, there is an interesting individual who was an indentured servant. He was late. He was late of New England. And this individual had seven of his descendants who were U.S. presidents, several billionaires, several current and prominent actors, and one vice president of the United States. You had George Herbert Walker Bush was one of this man's descendants. His name was Sam Hinckley, by the way. George Herbert Walker Bush's son, George Walker Bush, was a president, also a descendant of Sam Hinckley. One of George Herbert Walker's first cousin, George Herbert Walker Bush's first cousin, was Barack Obama's grandfather. So Barack Obama is related to George Herbert Walker Bush, president, George Walker Bush, president, and Dick Cheney was a cousin.
Yeah.
So you had four people, Bush, Cheney, and Obama, who were all cousins, all descendants of Sam Hinckley. That was through Obama, Lolo Sotoros, that was through his mother. His grandfather on that side was first cousin to George Herbert Walker Bush, president. Interesting family tree. Sam Hinckley, late of Cape Cod, was an indentured servant. He was a French Huguenot who indentured himself by contract to, I believe it was 25 years of servitude in return for being brought from France, whereas a Huguenot, Protestant, he was subject to persecution by the Catholics during a Hundred Years' War, as they called it. War of religion. Interesting story.
Yes, it is. Very interesting. Judge, what do you have any plans for the mentally ill? Yeah, here late we've seen where in different places where the mentally ill have been.
Let me say this. Ronald Reagan, we picketed him when he was first running for governor of California back in the 60s. He campaigned on a plaque saying he was going to close down California's mental institutions because the mentally ill were just faking it. They could get out and work. So he closed them down, and then when he got to be president, his administration did the same across the country. But mental health issues are real.
Yes.
Most people don't accept that unless they run into a family member or a neighbor or somebody that they do a fatal attraction dating game with, and then they reluctantly start absorbing it. But mental health is something that does need to be addressed, and too often they're just simply locked up and put away when that's not doing anything about helping out their mental health. Some of the policies that are being implemented are not good for them. As I alluded to earlier, people do much better when they have a purpose or a cause that they can articulate. If only being a man or being a woman, as that implies one should be when it comes to behaviors. Now, when you don't deal with that, people start going adrift and they have a lot of mental health issues. And when I was on the bench, I always made sure that just about everybody that I sentenced was given a mental health evaluation to see where they were coming from. And the picture was not a good one. So mental health issues do need to be addressed. Also, there is a popular trend these days to say the person isn't suffering from a mental health issue, this, that, and the other is normal. No, it's not. And we need to be cognizant of that, because when you start trying to take what is a mental health issue and normalizing it, you get problems, because the people who fit into those categories do not have adequate access to what they need to live healthy, productive lives without a great deal of personal suffering or suffering paid for by what others have to go through to deal with them.
Yes. I mean, I personally really think that's something that needs to be addressed, you know, especially when you hear of, you know, people that are being killed by police officers, you know, for running around with no clothes on, or because they're speaking very loudly. And, you know.
Well, here's the point about that. The police are not in the military. They are not out there to win medals and dying for the people that they're supposed to be patrolling. They want to come home to their loved ones at night, and they want to see them graduate from high school, college, and see their first grandchildren, and they want to get laid by their spouses. Excuse me for putting that in there.
Yeah.
They don't feel attachment to the people that they are supposed to be keeping in order a lot of times, and there is no incentive for them to behave heroically. The other thing is that, first off, ask yourself if you've ever been in a physical combat in your life, past being in second, third grade, and you've had to deal with having a fist fight with somebody. Understand that oftentimes what the cop is going to run into is minimally a fist fight. Minimally. A lot of these cops are like a lot of the youth these days. They've never been in a fist fight ever in their lives. And the first time as a cop they get in one is the first time that they've ever been exposed to that adrenaline pumping and what happens when you really, really have to face down your fear and bravely bust a guy in the mouth or wrestle him to the ground. A lot of times the crazy people are not so innocent as they seem in terms of what the cop has to face, and this cop gets scared. He may be in over his head. He may be a cop trying to prove to him or herself that he can be a brave individual when he or she is not. These are things that we ignore. I think that as a job requirement, there should be psychologists or psychiatrists on the payroll for the police department or subcontracting to them, who get involved with monthly or periodically assessments of everybody to see what their health problems are, because the cops suffer from mental illness problems too, and there is a very high rate of suicide in their ranks. So there is this thing on a lot of applications that says, have you ever sought mental health counseling, treatment, therapy, etc.? And if you say yes, it kind of knocks you out of the box. You can't buy a firearm, for example, and a cop would be in a weird position if he couldn't buy a personal firearm, yet he's required to wear one that the taxpayers pay for. So it would be a requirement of the job. You would have to submit to the periodic assessments and evaluations whether you requested them or not, which I think would help out their mental health, and we need to expand that to making such services once again available to the public.
Yes, I agree, yes.
So it is what it is. But then you get other things too, like there's one exemplar around here, somebody who has again and again been committed involuntarily, seems to feel that something wrong has been done to them, so they stalk the judges that order the commitment, and they do a lot of things, and they become a cause célèbre for black folk getting locked up for nothing, when actually it's for demonstrable mental health problems. But we have to adjust our attitudes toward the whole thing so we can be effective. And we have to ensure that it's used for the right purposes and not for some forms of oppression.
Yeah. That's what my last question to you. No. You were great. My last question to you. Now, the food, you know, with gardening and everything else, I mean, I gardening and, you know, teaching people to utilize the grounds to have gardens to grow their own food. Is that something that is being worked on?
Well, there
or
are areas
that...
where there are areas like in certain parks you can be assigned land so you can do that. But here's one of the big problems nobody talks about. You talked about water. People don't like their tomatoes and stuff eaten up by caterpillars or vermin, so they try to protect them, and you get a great concentration of insecticide dumped into the system when people try to protect their plants they grow on small lots.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other thing. For the last several millennia, humans have been trying to engage in commerce with each other. If you have a garden, fine, if you're not going to overly poison the place so you can keep the bugs off of your plants, fine. If you're going to be responsible with what you grow and how you grow it, fine. But you might also seriously consider just doing it as a hobby or as a supplement just because you choose to do so, not because you need it, and find something that's a bit more 21st century to invest your time and energy in. It would be a lot more profitable.
Well, if you're trying to get away from the GMOs, that's the reason for people not to put a lot of poisons and everything. Well, not to put any poison on it. And I mean, now, honestly, truly, if I get a potato or something like that and it has a wormhole in it, I'm happy. Because I know it's not sprayed. It's not poison. It's real.
Have you ever cut open an apple when you decided, I bet not bite this thing, let me cut it open and seen it infested with worms? Pretty astonishing sight. That used to be ordinary. Now, what I'm saying is this. I understand the thing about healthy food. I'm not going to knock it. I would just say this, two things. One, I had a good buddy who was a research scientist, also a licensed physician of all things, and he used to laugh about it. We were in L.A. He said, all right, come outside. He said, now take five deep breaths. Everybody did. He said, you just polluted yourself more with those five deep breaths than most of what you're going to eat for the next year. It's all relative. Understandably, we need to cut back on the toxins that we ingest. I also recall this. In my lifetime, I can remember the school nurse coming to our elementary school classes and saying, boys and girls, get your mothers to cook your food in pure lard, not vegetable shortening, and reuse your bacon fat to fry things with, and never cut the fat off meat because it's so good and nutritious for you. And you'd read Campbell's soup ads, and they'd say, mothers, notice the globules of fat floating on top of the soup, indicating how nutritious and packed with calories and vitamins it is. And then I can remember this thing back in the late 60s when they said milk was a perfect food for baby cows and it was bad for humans. And I've seen this up and down thing where one food is supposed to be horrible for you at one period and then great for you in another, and it flops back and forth. I would suggest that everybody be aware of what they eat. Don't focus on junk food or fast food. Eat reasonably, and don't eat poisonously if you can avoid it. A lot of us will eat when we get bored. A lot of us will eat when we get depressed, and that's understandable because humans have this drive from when we used to live not in condominiums but in caves and hovels and stuff and under the stars, where when we had free time, we spent it productively trying to feed ourselves so we could last through the next winter, or when we got depressed, that was because the seasons were changing, the nights were getting longer, and it was a signal to eat, 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 so you can survive the winter. So, yeah. But just be sensible about what you do. If you want to grow stuff for yourself, do so, but be careful what you put on your produce, because you may be poisoning yourself directly rather than indirectly. Understand what you're talking about. We hear things like gluten-free. You know what gluten is?
No, I don't. I've now constantly heard it, but
okay,
I never looked
now,
it up.
Here's what gluten is. A few decades back, people were saying we all needed to be vegetarians, but we needed protein, so they started growing plants, breeding plants to have more protein, vegetable protein. That's called gluten. What happened is that without people realizing it, who are responsible for cultivating plants with higher and higher protein contents, that became something that would cause certain people to have allergies that kicked in. So now the gluten, which started off as a good thing, that is ramping up the protein and vegetable matter so you didn't have to eat some poor animal, now it becomes productive of allergies. See how that goes?
Yes.
You can't be sure of anything, so just be reasonable in what you do. Tomorrow, what's poison may become good for you, and what's good for you may become poison, depending upon who's saying it.
Yeah.
And there's another little
true
phrase. When it comes to science, this is an important one. Sometimes you need to understand that when you say, let me make sure I get this right.
Okay.
Okay. Saying that we don't understand something now or can't do something now does not mean we won't ever be able to do it.
Okay.
That's the saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially
in other
when it
words,
comes to the food and with, I'm just against these MDOs. Anyway.
Why?
Yeah, I prefer my food to, you know, just get it the way how it came, like the ground to be.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, a lot of the refrigerators on the block weren't refrigerators. They were ice box, and somebody drove by in the horse carriage or then the truck with blocks of ice they delivered,
yeah,
so people could put them in their ice boxes and keep the food safe. Remember,
yeah,
a lot of this has to do with preserving food so that you don't starve to death. There's something remaining for you to eat.
Yeah.
No. Just keep that in mind. Healthy is healthy. But sometimes, for some people, that's all they can get. Would you rather be healthy and starve to death or be a little poisoned but still alive because you ate enough to keep breathing?
Yeah, you
that's
have to
your choice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it is what it is. Like, for example, one time, they used to put sodium nitrate or sodium nitrite in preserved meat so it would last long and wouldn't rot, so you could have something to eat, typically hard sausage, summer beef, summer sausage, salami,
yeah,
and stuff like that. Well, sodium nitrate or sodium nitrite is also known as saltpeter. And it is one of the three ingredients in gunpowder, saltpeter, sulfur, and charcoal. So it's not the best thing for you, but if you're starving otherwise, I mean, you're glad for the food, and you'll take a little poison on the side for flavoring. And the saying is, this is as far as they've gotten is not the same as this is as far as they'll get. Or you can say, this is as far as we've gotten isn't the same as saying this is as far as we'll get. In other words, we haven't completed the journey yet.
That is true. But I don't think that the GMOs should be pushed on us. I think they need to be labeled as what they are to give us the choice of whether we want to buy them or not.
Oh, sure. By the way, read the labels.
Yes, I mean, of course, and I do. But I'm just saying, even the things that are marked being organic, you know, now you're hearing about how they have chemicals and things on them as well. Not everything that is marked as organic is organic.
Well, do you know what organic means?
Isn't it something that's just from nature?
Technically organic is any, technically the definition of organic is any carbon compound. Most likely, anything that is a carbon compound is produced by a living organism. So organic is one of those newly minted phrases that people like to throw out. It's organic and good for you. Well, if you can eat it, it's organic. Anything that you can digest is organic. A lot of stuff you can't is also organic. You can't ingest diamonds, but they're organic since they're pure carbon. They used to have a phrase, organic diamonds. But you see, we just take that health food. What do you mean by health food? Is it what they taught us? Don't cut the fat off of your meat. Always tell your mother to save bacon grease in an old coffee can so you can cook your food in bacon grease because it's more nutritious for you.
Yeah. I remember that coming
that's
up.
Bad. Bad for cholesterol, isn't it? He'll die of a heart attack and clogged veins. But it used to be looked at as healthy. We still try to get into drinking or eating milk products. We made a great advance technologically when we found out how to make cheese and butter. But some said drinking milk or eating milk products is bad. We have the sacred cow syndrome. In India, they have a big problem with protein deficiencies. They could grow beans, legumes, as it were, on this arable land, but they don't because they have to grow fodder for cows. Cows are sacred. The Brahmins get a chance to drink the milk but can't eat the cow. Nobody else can eat the cow meat, so the cow thrives, and because they're sacred, other people starve. Called sacred cow syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you go to the People's Republic of China, you can stop off in Hong Kong or Singapore, and if you've got $250,000, they'll cure your type 1 or type 2 diabetes. They infect you with a genetically modified virus, which takes over your cells, alters your gene code accordingly, and if you get fresh stem cells, your body grows so it is not just diabetically resistant. It doesn't have diabetes anymore, and you no longer need to get treated. It takes about a month, but you can't do that in the United States because we have a sacred cow. It requires fresh stem cells, so we have legislation that says we are limited to the same seven strains of stem cells that we've had for the last 45 going on 50 years. And they have petered out. They don't work. But if you live in China, you can be cured, not treated for, but cured of type 1 and type 2 diabetes. See how they
And they should be. In the States, since there's such a high number of people that are diabetic.
Yes. But you can't because you need fresh stem cells. In China, they have a large, huge supply. Remember this thing about one child per family? Now that they have a year and a half ago to two?
Yeah.
It's all a thing of compromises.
Yes, it is.
But it is what it is.
Yes, it is. Yes, it most definitely is.
Yeah.
Now, would you like to give your closing comments? I want to thank you so much for being with me tonight. I truly enjoyed you, and I look forward to when you become mayor.
Thank you. And may I make this suggestion?
Yes, sir.
If you do the right thing, you will sleep easier at night. It takes a lot to be brave and courageous, but you get a lot back from it. Being free is not safe. Freedom is a dangerous condition. Be free. Do your duty. Understand that you have honor. Understand that you have obligations and responsibility. Take great pride in seeing to those things, and you'll feel much better about yourself.
Thank
do what you,
you
have
will,
to do.
You know,
and remember, one last comment. Ain't nobody getting out of this sucker alive, so you might as well go
right
out
about
behind
that.
Something good. Ain't nobody getting out of here alive, so you might as well go out for something worthwhile.
Okay,
with
hold
that,
on for one second, Judge Doe. Hold on. Hold on, Judge Doe. Somebody has their hand up. This is Brother Ray. This is Brother Ray, so you have to take him.
Well, good evening.
Hello, Brother Ray.
And Judge Brown, I've listened to the entire show. I really appreciate the information and the knowledge that you're bringing. And I'm willing to assist your campaign for mayor of Memphis. And I have friends there I'd like to connect you with. I've gotten the number that you gave me before. And I will have some of our people call you. Because there's a way to win. And the way to win is to unite. And we need to unite and get our hands in.
I want this to be a mecca for the South and for the United States. It should be one of our great cities instead of a neglected city going to decay. I want you to want to come there. That's it. Thank you much for that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you, brother. I just wanted you to know.
Have you known who you're talking to, Jeff?
Please tell me.
Oh, that's Ray Fauntroy.
Oh, all right, Mr. Fauntroy.
My pleasure, sir. I'm just elated by your conversation tonight.
Thank you. All right. I guess this is time for me to give my sign off. High by and gotta go. This has been Judge Joe. Call me when you can, since I'm the one that ran.
Yes, you are.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh,
amen.
Thank you for being with us. Thank you. And thank everyone for joining us. Don't forget, Drive Bones on Sunday for the Helios Filios. Don't forget Brother Ray on Sunday at 3 p.m. for the drum call. For everyone, the
drum at 3 p.m. Eastern time. No matter where you are in the world, join Brother Ray for the drumming. Brother Ray, you want to add anything to that?
Well, just that the drumming is the heart, is the heartbeat of the of humanity, and we're reaching out to the creator of the universe through our drum call to make a joyful noise and to pray for divine intervention so that we may have peace on this, his planet. Or, and I just thank all of those who join us every Sunday. Just drum and pray. And we can drum and pray. Joe Brown right into office in Memphis, and we'll do that. It's a done deal, Doc.
Yes, thank you, sir. Okay, well, thank y'all, and everyone have a good night.
Okay, hi.
All right,
Jesse.
Thank you.
Good night.
You're my peace. I look everywhere, and I couldn't find it nowhere. I know today somebody looked for the alcohol bottle. Somebody tried to find it on crack cocaine. But I came to tell you that God is the only one that can give you peace, everlasting peace. Peace that flows down like a river, down in your soul. Give him the glory, give God the praise. Peace, my peace. You're my peace, the kind of peace that passes all understanding. When I should be crying, when I should be filled with despair, when my back is up against the wall, somebody may be asking me today, why are you praising God when everything seems to be going wrong? But I can tell you that when I woke up this morning, I woke up in God's peace. I felt the peace. I felt the peace of God all around me. I thank you for your peace. I thank you for your joy. You're my peace. 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 Right there with you. And he's letting you know right now that I'm your peace. I don't care what you're going through this morning. He's saying, I'm your peace. Lean and depend on me. I hear him saying, trust in the Lord with all thine heart.
My peace.
Lean not unto that I will keep you in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. And I can hear somebody saying, oh God, thou wilt ordain peace for us, but thou also has wrought all works in us. He has delivered my soul in peace from the battle that was against me. The Lord will give strength unto his people. The Lord will bless his people with his peace. You're my peace. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord, for being my peace. You're my peace. In the midst of my storm, you have already delivered me. You're my peace. You're my peace. You're my peace.
There is.
There is peace. There is peace. There is peace. There is peace. But the Lord God is ordaining peace. He's ordaining peace to be among you, to be with you, to be in your mind, to be in your thoughts. Let it in. Let the peace come in. Yeah, yeah. The peace of God. The peace that passes all understanding. I know there's confusion around you. I know the enemy looks like he's winning. But the Lord is saying this morning, I'm giving you a peace that passes all understanding. And my sons and my daughters, this peace shall keep your heart and your mind. It's a keeping peace. It's a peace that holds you together. It's a peace that gives you strength. It's a kind of peace that gives you courage. It's a kind of peace that lifts you up where you're torn down. It's the kind of peace that wipes the tears from your eyes. It's the kind of peace that brings joy, unspeakable joy, and full of the morning glory. So I say to you today, peace, peace. I can feel somebody's warfare now. He said, I can't make it another day. I'm trying to hold on with everything I've got. But I hear the Lord saying, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might, and grab a hold to God. Peace.